getting engaged for homeschooling. Next on Principles and Policies.
Hi, this is Chuck Michaelis, and today I'm going to ask you to do something that we do occasionally on this program. We're going to ask you to call some state representatives on a bill. The bill is HB, that's House Bill HB 237, and it is the repeal of the Common Core. The Common Core is what is the subject of today's program, and we're going to tell you who we would like you to call. Calls need to go to the following leaders to request more hearings on Representative Andy Thompson's bill. He is the sponsor, main sponsor of HB 237, to halt the Common Core implementation in Ohio. First of all, Education Committee Chairman Gerald Stebbleton, 614-466-8100. That's 614-466-8100. Education Committee Vice Chairman Andrew Brenner, 614-644-6711. That's 614-644-6711. Speaker of the House, William Batchelder. His number is 614-466-8140. That's 614-466-8140. And of course, Governor Kasich. His number is 614-466-3555. That's 614-466-3555. Now, this bill has been given one hearing, and the chairman, Chairman Stebbleton, has been quoted as saying the bill is going nowhere. The bill has 14 co-sponsors and a very large segment of the Ohio citizenry supporting it. You'll find out why on today's show. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is my co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you in the studio, as always. And, you know, we're down to once a week, so it's a little different than it used to be. It's a little easier.
Yes, we're not doing this at 10 o'clock at night and having to get it cut for the next day. We're
That's
doing
right.
A great job. No, ladies and gentlemen, if you've been with us for a while, you know that Principles and Policies had been daily for a 15-minute program every day of the week, and then our hour program here on Saturday. Well, we've decided in the interest of both mine and Chuck's mental and physical well-beings to just have it be on Saturdays. And that started in the month of July, and now we're rolling into August. And what we're going to try to do over the next few months is to bring you information about exciting things that are going on here in the state of Ohio that you, as a liberty-loving believer, conservative, if you want to use that term, although Chuck and I kind of shy away from that a little bit, who thinks that we ought to have a Christian basis for all that we do, well, we want to expose you to some things that are going on around the state that you might want to get plugged in on, that you may want to become a part of. You may want to join up as a member of some of the organizations that we're going to be talking with over the next few months. And you are probably going to want to at least listen so that you can become more well-educated on some very contentious topics that are soon to be bubbling up around us here in the state of Ohio. And with that, today we're very pleased to have on as our special guest, Mark Stevenson. Now, Mark is the Executive Director of Ohioans for Educational Freedom. Now, Ohioans for Educational Freedom, or OEF for short, is a kind of a unique player in the state of Ohio because as an advocacy organization for the right to home educate, which Chuck and I are both very much a part of, OEF has a significant distinction because early on, Mark and the fellow organizers of OEF decided that they were going to create this as a political action committee, a PAC, so that they could get engaged politically in campaigns to help shape or determine who is representing us in Columbus, both at the State House and on the State Board of Education, which, if you are interested in education and especially homeschooling, those are a couple important places to have people who are friends of yours. Mark has been a longtime homeschool leader and activist in the northeastern part of the state of Ohio, and he joins us today via Skype. Mark, welcome to Principles and Policies.
Hey, thanks for having me, Barry and Chuck. I appreciate being on your show today.
Well, we appreciate having you, Mark. Now, I know I didn't do any justice whatsoever to your background bio or probably to the mission and vision of OEF. So have at it and let us know a little bit more about you and about the organization.
You actually didn't do too bad of a job, Barry. Succinctly, maybe, my wife and I have been homeschooling since 1986. So we're part of the 80s generation of homeschooling families. So we homeschooled when it wasn't cool. We basically homeschooled before the Ohio Home Education Regulations came into existence. And had,
does that mean you're a rebel, Mark?
Pardon me?
Does that mean you were a rebel?
I don't know. I was part of the rebel group. I'm not sure I was exceptionally the rebel, but I hung with them. I hung tight with them. But we've been homeschooling four children. They're mostly adults at this point. We're homeschooling our last, and he's 17. And we've been a part of Christian Home Educators Stark County Association, which is known by Cheska, and I've been in leadership in that group, support group, since 1988 in one way or another. Support group leaders, chairman of the board. I'm currently the political action committee chair for this homeschool support group. We usually have like 110 families in Stark County that join our group. There's more than that in Stark County. And then since then, I've moved on and started a statewide email list in 1999 called Ohio Homeschool Leaders through Yahoo Groups. And we had communication with support group leaders for homeschooling in Ohio since that time. And with the advent of Facebook, we kind of looked at that, and Randy Pope and I started Ohioans for Educational Freedom, as you said. And the way we launched was we took particular interest in the State Board of Education because they have purview over the homeschool rules in Ohio, and so therefore it made sense to be involved in the elections of those people. So we actually, in 2010, we ran four candidates, and we won two elections, two of those seats. One was Kathleen McGurvey in District 2, and one was Debbie Tirhar in District 4. 2 years later, since they go on staggered terms, 2 years later, in 2012, we won probably, and that was last year, we won three seats out of seven contested seats, but we also endorsed a scattering of state house and state senate seats as well. So all told, we probably were a little under 50% of our win ratio there. But our point is to put people in the State Board of Education specifically, but also on the state Ohio House of Representatives and state senate that are homeschool friendly, school choice friendly, parental choice and education friendly. So that's what we do.
Well, I would say, Mark, that's not a small task. And having about a 50% win rate after only being formally organized for about 2 or 3 years is pretty good. Have you seen any, rewards from all of your efforts from those elections?
Certainly. In 2008, the homeschool regulations come up for review every 5 years. They were adopted for the first time in 1989 by the State Board of Education. So every 5 years, the homeschool rules would come up for a review, as is with all administrative code. The first three cycles, they were kind of just rubber stamped, like, you know, there's no need to review the rules. They're just fine as they are. In 2008, the Ohio Department of Education had signaled in the middle of the summer that the homeschool rules were going to be brought up for review, but they never told us, you know, what it was going to be. This was kind of, this predates OEF, but it's kind of the impetus of why we started. So during 3 weeks in the summer of 2008, the homeschool community in Ohio was in an absolute panic. They opened comment up to the public for what they called stakeholder input, and homeschoolers responded to the tune of 11,200 emails to Columbus saying, you know, leave us alone, leave the homeschool rules alone. So that was really, you know, Randy and I basically said, you know, this is going to be the last time we're caught like this, and we're not going to let this happen again. So when we went into the elections for the state school board, We pretty much have realized after the 2008 to now has been 5 years. So the homeschool rules came up for review again this year. So wouldn't you know, absolutely no movement on revising the rules at all. And I think that's due to the fact that we've gotten involved and we've elected several people to that state school board. So therefore, yes, I think we have, had some good results as far as getting involved.
Well, I have a question. Isn't that thing about getting caught flat-footed, or as the British say, on your back foot? Isn't that something that as conservatives we always find ourselves in that situation, because our mindset is that basically if we are quiet and do what we're supposed to do and move along, then nobody's going to bother us, and we forget the idea that the other side of the question is always thinking in terms of activism. In other words, we want control. We want you to be essentially to kowtow to our ideas. And in order to do that, we have to be in control of the situation. And so they're always looking for a way to, quote unquote, revise the rules. Would that not be a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and here's the thing, too, about that, Chuck, is that Americans, by and large, are used to being congenial to a certain degree about their politics. That's why the things that you don't talk about in public are religion and politics, because people don't want to get in these massive disagreements with each other because they know it's possible. So by and large, Americans like to be per se amiable about their discussions. But as you say, the liberal side of it, they're always working to be confrontational, and they do it with a purpose, and they do it very well. In fact, I subscribe to the theory of a book that's out called Confrontational Politics by H.R. Richardson.
Yeah, it's a great book. Right. Great book.
Yeah, and, you know, he makes great sense. You know, I've learned so much from reading. It's a thin little read, and it's worth anybody's time. You can read it in an evening. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, because us conservatives are so busy being nice about it, the liberals take over. And I use those terms loosely because, you know, there's liberal Democrats and there's liberal Republicans. So it makes no difference to me what the party is. But we're so used to getting dictated to, whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, that, you know, I've found very, very little reward in that at all. And the model that OEF is going to use is Republican or Democrat, if they're not going to go along with our issues, we're going to attack. And I don't mean in the respect of anything except outside of political activism. I mean, you know, in confrontational politics, you've got to overwhelm your opponent. And if that means overwhelm the Republicans, that's what we've got to do. And in fact, they're our worst enemy at most points. So, you know, I would say this, you know, Americans are used to being nice, but you know what? There's no nice to this. Our country is being taken over. Our Constitution is being hijacked. Our Bill of Rights. And all we're left with at this point is survival. So I would suggest that Americans who are listening to your show, that they would equip themselves with the attitude of protecting their rights no matter what the cost, because that's what it's coming down to.
Well, one of the things that that Barry and I have talked about in the past on different shows is the fact that the left always wants to politicize everything. And by everything, I mean literally everything. Everything has to do with politics. It's an Alinsky tactic, and it goes beyond Alinsky. It's a Hegelian tactic that basically it's dialectical, and everything suddenly becomes about politics. And this is what why most people want to avoid politics, because it does create those confrontational situations that most people don't. Let's face it. I've been accused of being confrontational and liking it. And I say, well, I always say, no, I really don't like it. I kind of hate it. But it has to be done.
I don't mind it a bit. Matter of fact, I kind of thrive on confrontationalism.
Yeah. Well, Barry, you're a professional lobbyist. You're a confrontational lobbyist. You get paid to do that.
If any of my clients are listening, I didn't say this. Yes. I'd do it even if I didn't get paid.
I'm a hobbyist. You know, I'm a weekend confrontation guy. So
no, but Mark, you know, you're right in one sense. You know, we don't want to talk about religion and politics. I was going to say, and interrupt saying, Yeah, that's the reason why all of our conversations are incredibly boring and we're not really getting anywhere, because honestly, the three things that we need to talk about and start bringing into our conversations as Christian conservatives are the three major disciplines that the world runs on. Mm-hmm. And that's our religion or our theology. We need to talk about history, which involves politics, and we need to be able to talk about economics from a biblical viewpoint. Because if we don't start engaging on those particular issues and engaging strongly from a position of absolute truth as shaped by God's word, mm-hmm. we are going to end up facing a nightmare in this country. You know, it's been said that, you know, our country was founded on Christian principles, you know, from the Mayflower Compact forward, and that we have basically we've been living on borrowed capital and the bank account's about dry. Well, I think it's time we started reinvesting by being willing to be a little confrontational, even with our friends and our loved ones, and start talking about these issues. Now, I love what you guys are doing with OEF, because you're being confrontational with those people who, in many instances, take your supporters, your constituency, for granted at election time, thinking, well, you've got no place else to go, i.e. the Republican Party. But I agree with you in the sense that it doesn't matter if they're Republican or Democrat, if they're Socialist or Green Party, Constitution Party or Natural Law. The point is, if they're not standing up for what's right, then we need to be standing up and calling them to account. I'm excited about what OEF's been doing, and I'm looking forward. Now, offline we talked, you said there's probably, about five state board races that are coming up that your organization is going to be engaging in?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Let me first just address something you just hit on, and that is, you know, you can bank on the fact that people are going to try and circumvent conservatism and are going to take us to task. And you can bank on it's probably going to be the Republicans just like the Democrats. In fact, if the Republicans are complicit in anything that is being pushed by the Democrats, well, they're the same way. So that's why, you know what, it doesn't matter who they are. And if it's an incumbent, then they better think that we're going to try and run somebody. I won't absolutely guarantee we will, but I'm going to try. With the State Board of Education, we have five seats coming up for election next year. State District, or District 2, which is up near the Lorain area, and it stretches several counties. State District 3, that's near the Dayton area. State District 4, and State District 8, which has been gerrymandered to go all the way from Stark, Columbiana County, is all the way down to by the river and curl off to the left a little bit into Vinton County. So, the person that we had gotten elected last year, that is the homeschool graduate, 24-year-old Sarah Fowler, she ran for an unfulfilled term. So that means she's going to have to run next year to keep that seat if she will, in fact, run again. So, so all told, we have five seats, and she's in District 7. So that shouldn't be too hard for Sarah if she took 60% of the vote in a three-way race. I would think that she would be able to do it fairly easily. But
Let me ask something about that, Mark, before you move on to the next one. You know, yes, she's running a three-way race, but she was running to fill an unexpired term, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do you not think that the education lobby, the OEA, and other minions will not try desperately, and I emphasize the word desperately, to fund and run a candidate specifically to try to knock the homeschooler out off the state board?
Yeah, I think they'll try that, of course. You got to expect that. You fully expect those kinds of things. I mean, after some experience, you know the predictability of some of this. I don't know. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say, just from my experience level, that you know, knowing what kind of a ferocious campaign that Sarah ran the last time, she's not content to just. If in fact she does run again, I'm not clear that. But if she does choose to run again, she ran this phenomenal campaign. suit against an attorney and a NASA researcher and both competent men, and she beat them not just handily, but 60% is just unheard of. So I would have to say, you know, even if the educational bureaucrats want to throw a ton of money, they're going to have to really beat her on the ground, because that's where she won it.
Well, and that's good to hear, because, you know, oftentimes I think many conservatives, good-hearted people otherwise, think that, well, we got one of ours in, so then we can sit back and yawn and just watch the fireworks and just go and vote in November, and, well, our guy will stay in, except that's usually not how politics works. Politics works that if you get somebody good in on your side, all the people who are opposed to you are actively sharpening knives and raising pockets of money in order to take you out. And your first reelection, which honestly, even though she was filling an unexpired term, this would be considered her first quote-unquote stand for full election. It's really a reelection effort. That is determinative of whether or not you're going to be in there for a long term or not. Because if you can win your first reelection, your first coming back to the voters after they voted for you before knowing, you know, more about you than what was just put into your campaign materials, if you win that second election, then obviously you're doing something right, or you're doing something that the voters are in your district are pleased with. And that's the tough one, because that's when everybody, you know, you're still somewhat untested. Oh, the last election could have been a fluke. There could have been some oddity to it. And now they've got your measure, and obviously with Sarah, she's homeschooler and she's conservative, so I'm sure that the professional education lobby is really ready to take her out at the knees. So I would just encourage listeners and anybody else who would be there or be willing to help to not just sit back and just go cast a vote, but to actually get active and help and knock on doors and make phone calls and help keep people in. And I'm sure OEF is going to be giving them ways to do that. Right, Mark?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you go on our website, we have the only clickable maps of the state of Ohio where you can, and at first we started with the State Board of Education, you know, where you can go and click a district and it would bring up the candidate that we endorse during election season. During non-election seasons, it'll bring up the a member that sits in that seat. So we have gobs of information about the members that sit on the board currently, but during campaign season, it will be all about our endorsed candidate. We'll have a web form there about what can you do for this candidate, and we will make sure that that information gets on passed on to the campaign. Well, now we've moved on, and we have clickable maps of the Ohio House districts and Ohio Senate districts. And there's nothing like this, Barry and Chuck, nothing like this in the country. We are doing some very cutting-edge a website, and there's nobody doing what we're doing, using clickable maps like this to actually engage voters. Our website between August and November last year got nearly 2 million hits. That tells you that web traffic that we draw. So we're going to do our best to engage everything we can.
Well, and that's excellent. Now, you said there were some other races. You were getting ready to talk about another incumbent that was supported by OEF. And that is whom? Kathleen McGurvey, right?
Oh, yes, yes. Kathleen McGurvey is a very stand-up person. She's very solid. I think the one thing, Barry, that we have to research, because we have questionnaires. So the questionnaire that's going to go around this time is going to be about the potato that nobody wants to touch, and that is Common Core standards and associated bureaucracy that go along with all that. So it's really going to be dependent on how people questionnaires about if they are in favor or not in Common Core, because at this point we are going to advocate for campaigns that are not in favor of Common Core. So that's what we're doing.
Okay, well, we're going to talk a little bit more in the second half of the program about that Common Core issue. But let's go ahead and talk about these races you guys are going to be looking at and finish that out here in our first half.
But, I mean, we're going to be looking at House seats. We're going to be looking at Senate seats. So, and I would expect, you know, that the people that are up for reelection on the state school board, if it's Debbie Tirhar or if it's Kathleen McGurvey, if it's Sarah Fowler, all three of them If they happen to answer our questions correctly on Common Core, we're all for them. Sarah Fowler's already on record as being against Common Core, so that's a no-brainer. Jeffrey Mims Jr. is a guy that's up for re-election next year on the State Board of Education, but he is a known liberal. He actually attacked homeschooling a year ago, and we got him on record and on statement for it. So we actually may have a candidate lined up to run against him, but we're going to wait and see what comes out of the field. Generally, with the State Board of Education, since they don't run primaries because they're nonpartisan seats, people usually pull petitions in May or June, and they have to file them the middle of August. So what we usually see who files petitions, send all the questionnaires out, and then we pick our person and then go with them for a quick 2.5-3 month campaign season.
Okay. What do you think the likelihood is of these five seats that are open? I mean, do you believe that you're going to have candidates for all five seats, or are you looking at targeting a percentage of them? How are you doing?
No, we're looking to engaging all five seats. Last year, because these are on 2-year rotations, they're 4-year terms, so they're staggered board seats. So there's like five of them that are up 1 year and 7 of them are up another year. Or 6 of them, I'm sorry, because there's 11 elected seats. Unless somebody's finishing out a partial term and that comes up in an off year or whatever. But they're always every 2 years somebody comes up on the state school board for election. But, so we're looking to we engaged all 7 of them last year. We won 3. So we're looking to engage in all 5 coming up next year. So whoever that's going to be.
Well, and you talked about how with the homeschool regs and the review every 5 years, how getting the right people in office will help homeschoolers. Now, you guys just had an interesting advance that happened here recently in the legislature as well, now, didn't you?
Yes. There was an unexpected situation where a state House member had put an amendment on the state biennium budget. And the amendment basically was to allow homeschooled parents of homeschooled students to participate in public school sports and extracurricular activities. And that's a new wrinkle because normally that would have to go through a whole legislative process. And I know some of the sports governing bodies in Ohio have been highly resistant to allowing homeschoolers carte blanche into the system. The state policy before the amendment had passed was that it was up to each individual school district and superintendent as to whether or not that district allowed a homeschooler to participate in any of that. So there was a lot of inconsistency around the state. Well, with the amendment and the passage of that amendment onto the budget, and the governor had signed it, I think it was July 2nd or 1st, or may, no, it was June 30th. He basically put into motion that homeschooling parents, it's up to them now whether or not their children want to participate. So that was huge. It was big. No mistake.
Well, it is huge, but one of the things too, and I saw an interview, it's Representative Dave Hall, who's from the Holmes County area, Millersburg. And I saw an interview with him where he clarified that yes, they did go through the process, that the amendment was offered in committee. Yes. And it was rolled into the budget document, which was then sent to the Senate, then was brought back in a conference committee, and then taken, and both chambers voted on it. And obviously the governor signed the bill into law without vetoing that provision. Mm-hmm. So, but I also have heard, like, the Ohio High School Athletic Association, which is the state governing body, is, well, I think you said the word apoplectic over this particular issue, thinking it's going to be the death of high school sports, or all of the, the camaraderie or the esprit de corps or something, if we allow somebody who's being home educated to actually play on the football team or on the basketball team or to golf with the team or whatever, except for the fact, Mark, that oftentimes coaches are salivating over certain players that before they couldn't get a hold of because they were being homeschooled.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, let these people get melodramatic at the drop of a hat because they're political bodies. They're not just sports governing bodies. They're political. And you know what? Let them throw out all the melodrama they want. You know, the law is the law at this point, and they can't do anything about it right now. They may try to, you know, I would foresee that they may try to challenge it down the road here, but right now they have to follow the law, and they know it. And
and that may be true for this coming mm-hmm. school year, but we mm-hmm. have a whole thing in Ohio called the budget corrections piece, which will start coming up at the end of this year, beginning of next year. My guess is that's where they're going to try to carve it back so that this is only a 1 year aberration according in their viewpoint. So that's something that a lot of folks are going to need to pay attention to. And of course, that's something that you have been putting out with OEF. You guys have been putting out information about this. You guys work closely with groups like Homeschool Legal Defense and others, and they put out their analyses and, you know, looking at the law. And really, this law is something very unique because instead of saying that a district can authorize homeschoolers to participate, I believe that the way this law reads is the homeschoolers are the ones who will make the decision whether or not they want to participate, and then the school district has to accommodate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes,
which is amazing because before, and you know, this whole situation, Mark. I think that's been a struggle in many homeschool organizations as well. I know in some we've even heard where this has caused splits in the organizations about things like this, where parents were willing to send their kids to the public school system to take maybe it's one class a day, maybe it's so many credit hours per semester in order to elect to qualify them under that local school board to be able to be eligible to play those organized sports. But this changes that whole game plan so that children who have an aptitude for sports can also play and I'm assuming this would be, you know, they'd be like any other student, they'd have to try out for teams and they'd be subject to being cut and things of that nature. And of course, I don't believe there's any provision in that new legislation that gives them any right of legal action if they're cut, even if they think they're being discriminated against because they're not part of the school system. But the key is that it's very interesting to see how this will be played out. And I'm sure that OEF's going to be taking a very close watch point on this because I'm worried, Mark. I guess, you know, I've never been a big fan. I believe if you're going to homeschool, go all the way or forget it. You know, if you're going to homeschool, and that means that you have to accept some of the consequences, which means little Johnny might not get a football scholarship. Not that he would get one anyway, probably, but you have to. But these, you know, hybridizations, I guess, is my concern. And I'm this is me personally. I'm not speaking for Chuck or for OEF or anybody else. I'm speaking for myself. These hybridizations, where we accept a little of the public school control over our quote unquote home education, really is an area where I will die on that hill. Well,
that's the old story about how much dog dropping are you going to let in the brownies?
I didn't want to go to that story, Chuck.
I cleaned it up as much as I could, but we've all heard the story.
And I know different people in the homeschooling community have different views on this. However, it's difficult. I mean, and Mark, I know you've heard of these fights before as well. They've been all the way up to the state level. You know, organizations like ECOT K-12, are they public schools? Is it homeschooling? You know, organizations have very, very disparate views on this. All I'm worried about is you get this, and we're saying it's a great thing right now for homeschoolers, but if somewhere down the line somebody tweaks the language a little bit and says that, you know, once you're in, you're accepted for academics, or I mean for extracurriculars, will the school system then want to count them in their average daily membership? What will that do in relation to, you know, how districts are interacting with homeschools? You know, are they going to say, well, now that your child's been accepted into sports, then your homeschool program has to have these components to keep up with what the rest of the team is learning? I can see a lot of areas where maybe our homeschool regs aren't going to be clear enough or haven't addressed that issue yet. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, we weren't exactly behind this bill from the beginning or anything. We'd learned about it. So as a leader in the state, as far as a political action committee for homeschoolers and by homeschoolers, it's necessary for us to keep our ear to the ground on where homeschoolers are on this. And there are quite divergent views ever since this news came out at the end of June, beginning of July. There are divergent opinions all over the place. And so, you know, far be it from us to dictate everybody's opinions. That wouldn't be what we're about. We're about keeping an eye on this. You know, this is good for the moment because basically it boils down to the parents now have the choice. The choice is the parents to make instead of the schools, and it's consistent across the state. So that, of course, is the benefit. You know, as you said before, the downside would be is if this is readdressed, and then we're going to have to keep our eye on this, because if it is, then we're going to have another war on our hands. And but you know what? I see this way. Homeschoolers for a long time in the state of Ohio have had it so easy, and some of them just don't know how to fight. And so when it comes to things like this, you know, now I would have never introduced this legislation, but I can see how it's good for homeschoolers. But saying that, I guess I would say this, you know, you've got to be vigilant. You got to be careful. And you know that there are people that aren't happy about this. So if you know all that going into this, then you've got to keep an eye on it. And that's why OEF is so specific and so important to home educators and the homeschoolers in Ohio, and not just homeschoolers, but school choice advocates as well, because, you know, what hasn't been talked about here is that this bill also allows private school students to also attend public school sports and extracurricular activities. So this bill was crafted actually to not just allow homeschoolers, but private school students as well. And So there's this bigger coalition that, you know, if anything's messed with this law or any try to revise it or something down the road, we can always pull in more than just homeschoolers on this and pull in the private school parents. And, you know, we just got to make sure that we're advocating for the right reasons, because, you know, we're accountable to our constituency. And if people don't want something, then we've got to be careful. So, you know, as I said, it wouldn't have been my choice to introduce this bill, but it's done, and it will actually be a blessing to some homeschool students in Ohio. I know in other states they're trying really hard to pass what they call a Tim Tebow bill, and especially in Texas right now. And they've got a huge advocacy group in Texas, and they do everything big in Texas. But, you know, they don't even have what we have right now, and that's really quite astounding once you start to think about that.
Well, it can be, and I would just, you know, I would just advocate, and I'm sure, and like I said, you're staying aware, very aware of it, but I would just make sure, at least from my personal perspective, that the homeschoolers that I dealt with understood that it may come a point in the future that this very big advantage that they're being given might be used as a wedge to get them to compromise on other aspects of the homeschooling regs in order to keep this provision. And that's what I'm concerned
about. And that's actually something that I was just thinking about. It's not so much that it could happen. This is what's going on before the bill was passed. Mm-hmm. In fact, basically, there was a wedge driven through the community, the homeschooling community, because people were sending their kids back to public schools for the simple reason that they wanted to play sports or they wanted to participate in some activity. Let me give you, for instance, my kids were heavily involved in string orchestra at Westerville. And the fact is that my daughter was the only bass player, and she was very good and still is very good, actually. And the director of the string orchestra basically came, well, you know, is there no way we can reconsider this, blah, blah, blah. And I said, sure, there's a way. You let my daughter come and use my tax money that I'm already paying that runs this thing to play in your string quartet with me teaching her at home. Well, we can't do that. Well, I said, why not? I mean, after all, I am paying the taxes to make sure that this all goes on. I'm not using a school instrument. I'm using one that we are renting on our own that was simply couldn't be heard of. Well, it's used as a political club in order to keep parents or it was used before this law was passed, it was used as a political club to keep parents from pulling their kids out of the public school. And it could very easily, once again, become a club. Now, it's become nothing at this point. There is no leverage. And that what that means is there are a lot of people who are laying out a huge amount of money every year for the public schools who are being told, ha ha, we have your money. Too bad your kid can't use any of our facilities. And now that's not basically being allowed through this passage. And I think you're going to find that there are going to be a number of people who are seriously on the warpath over this issue and want to get that changed in the budget correction process. So we're going to have to be very vigilant to keep that.
Yeah, you can bet we're going to be watching it. I was quoted in the Newark Advocate over the weekend in an article about this, and I basically said that there are going to be some homeschoolers that like this amendment. And there's going to be some that don't. And the parents that had withdrawn their children from public schools in the first place, some will not, want to, put them back in for any reason at all, because they have certain views as to why they did it in the first place. And, you'd also subjected, the arrangement that you just had proposed. I've got another active bill in the General Assembly to give homeschoolers a tax, and that is highly controversial. Actually, there are some again with our ear to the ground. There are some homeschoolers that like the idea, and then there are some that say, it's going to get under the tent, and we don't want any reason for that to happen. I'd just rather not take a tax credit. So. And strangely enough, none of this is coming from any of the organizations. You have Homeschool Legal Defense Association, you have Christian Home Educators of Ohio, and us. But some of these are coming from constituents in certain districts that appeal to their legislator. And it's well-meaning and well-intended legislation, but then all the rest of us have to deal with it. And so, that's currently out there in the Ohio Senate. And it's like you said, Chuck, we just have to be careful. I'm a big proponent of expanding as much liberty to homeschoolers as I can, but that has to be done within the realm of true freedom. And when you put your kids back in a school setting and you get involved with the schools, those issues aren't crystal clear about what they mean. And I have the same concern you two do, that down the road that this will come back up again, and we'll be ready to deal with it. But we'll be ready to deal with it on the terms that how much this will impinge on homeschool freedom in Ohio. That's where we will be coming from.
And by the way, I wanted just to let you know, as a former Licking Countyan, the name of that newspaper, The Advocate, yes, that's commonly referred to as The Aggravate.
And it does do that on a regular basis. Mark, speaking of aggravation, this is one, again, unintended consequences, I think, is a good subtitle for this section. Because you mentioned this earlier, and I held us off because I wanted to talk about it in a little bit more depth. There's a major issue that almost wasn't, because this is a piece of legislation that was passed by the General Assembly almost 3 years ago, but it has now come to the forefront, and we're finally starting to realize just what kind of a pig in a poke our Ohio legislature might have put our educational freedoms in. And the issue we're talking about is called Common Core. You want to share with us a little bit about your guys' background with Common Core and what's going on?
Well, it's not just the General Assembly, Barry, but it's also the State Board of Education. They actually promulgated rules 3 years ago to institute Common Core standards on 4 subject areas. And so, some of my background personally is back in the early 90s, homeschoolers were fighting America 2000, Goals 2000, outcome-based education, and school to work. So we were all combating some of these educational theories and concepts that were coming out of the Washington, D.C. Beltway. And they were like unfunded mandates that were dropped into the states. But a lot of people wised up really fast about that in the 90s. And we actually managed to hold off a lion's share of of the system. You know, if anybody's heard Melanie Elsie speak in public about some of these programs, she used to say quite frequently, you know, you got to look inside what's inside the box. You know, they've repackaged everything. They've renamed it, retooled it, and called it something different, but it really is the same old thing. And that's exactly what Common Core standards are, you know, with relationship to all the other stuff in the past that's been trying to, you know, that has been given to the states. Outcome-based education is the same thing as Common Core. Common Core.
Thank you, Mark. I'm glad somebody's finally publicly said it.
Yep.
Because I've been screaming it for a while at people. This is the same fight we've been fighting for 20 plus years. So I appreciate you saying it.
Yeah, so you know, so here we are again, but this time it's managed to infiltrate a huge portion of states. And I think this is big thanks to probably the Obama administration, because they've been in charge of a lot of things for the last 5 years now. And so a lot of the policies have just been ramrodded into states, whether you were talking about stimulus spending and things like that. A lot of Common Core stuff got sifted into the states through stimulus packages. So, you know, go take that one and smoke it. But basically, you know, so here, you know, the state board promulgated some standards about 3 years ago. The General Assembly did as well, some laws. And so now, I'd say about 9 months ago, people started sniffing on Common Core and all of a sudden started finding out, man, this is stuff we fought a long time ago. And now it's here. It's not just being proposed. It's here. So now we're starting to take people to task. So again, I reiterate, you know, for the people we support, in their candidacy for State Board of Education, if there is a legislator that is currently introducing a bill, his name's Representative Andy Thompson, and he's going to be introducing a bill to repeal Common Core in the General Assembly. And if I find anybody, whether they're candidates for State Board of Education or State House or State Senate, that won't go along with trying to repeal this stuff until the public has had a good chance to look at it, and the General Assembly has had a good chance to look at it, we're not going to be supporting them. This is going to be a wedge issue for OEF. And we've got maps on our website, as I shared previously, and we're going to take people's positions, put them up on our website, and we're going to parade them for the public to see. And if people are for Common Core, we're going to see what we can do to run candidates against incumbents during primary season, and we're going to put all the positions up on the website so that people understand what they're looking at. And so, you know, may the best man win.
No doubt. Well, Mark, some might ask, what does Common Core have to do with homeschooling? Don't homeschoolers pick their own curriculum? And so why should they care about Common Core?
Well, the most obvious reason, Barry, and a lot of people will say this first, and but the most obvious reason is a lot of the testing mechanisms have to be developed around Common Core. So Ohio is now revising, so they're moving away from the Ohio graduation test, which they've had for many years now. But it was an old component to outcome-based education in the first place. But now they are going to redo the whole exam business. And all of the examinations with regard to Common Core curriculum, whether it's in this state or any, are going to be moved into an off-state testing site. So students test from a computer, and all the results go out of state. Basically, anything that's tested has to align to Common Core. So for homeschoolers, what that means is if they take SATs, ACTs, or college entrance exams, or anything of that nature, all of it is eventually going to be moved to align to Common Core. I know we used an Iowa Basic Skills Test, and already, you know, we've been using that every year to test our homeschool students. And this year is the first year that they sent another page that had Common Core aligned score values. And this is going to happen, quicker and quicker. So anybody that's not aligned eventually completely to Common Core is going to be out in the cold. And this is where it really matters to homeschoolers, because means out in the cold as far as secondary education, as far as, you know, career advancements. So, you know, it does matter. It matters.
Well, I think that you might have a point there, Mark. But the one thing I think we're finding out about Common Core the more we dig into it is these are not like world-class standards. Matter of fact, these are really more of the same of the almost least common denominator standards with the, that they're touting as being stringent and rigorous. But a number of states who adopted Common Core, and let's get a little of the history here. The reason why a state like Ohio and many of the other 45 states who adopted this Common Core concept, the reason why they did it was because they had previously adopted No Child Left mm-hmm. Behind and taken mm-hmm. hundreds of millions of dollars. I think in Ohio's case, it was over $330 million to implement No Child Left Behind, which had certain benchmarks that the states had to meet after a certain amount of time, or they would face financial penalties, i.e. they'd have to pay the money back. Well, guess what? No Child Left Behind standards were just as ridiculous as Common Core standards are, and so it was a total muddle, and school districts were not meeting them because, you know, every couple of years you were changing up and putting new standards in place and new testing procedures and rubrics. And, of course, in a state, every time you change the governor, they want to change education because everybody's the education governor. And,
yeah.
that includes John Kasich and Ted Strickland and Bob Taft and George Voinovich. And I could go back for 20, 30, 40 years. Everybody wants to be the education governor and put his thumbprint on education, which means everything gets to change about every 4 to 8 years, depending on how fast you cycle. Now you throw in No Child Left Behind, which mandates mm-hmm. changes. And what you have is no school district was able to keep up with it because of the cost of implementing. And now you're talking about with Common Core, everything has to be online.
Yeah.
Well, I feel sorry for the Vinton County local school district down around my area because they barely have enough money to have computers, much less to scrap them all and bring in brand new ones with high speed so that they can have something that has a processor capable of dealing with testing, accumulating the test, and then sending them off to an off-site or out-of-state vendor. But the key is, with No Child Left Behind, when they couldn't meet the benchmarks, the federal government said, "Hey, we'll give you an option. Your option is if you adopt Common Core standards, we'll give you a waiver from the penalties of No Child Left Behind. Ah, but there's a catch there too. We'll give you some money and you dole it out to the districts. And when the districts take it to implement Common Core, if they turn it back or if they reject Common Core, they have to pay the money back. So what we did was we shifted the payment burden from the state to the local level. And now we're trying to make it like a pig and a poke. We're trying to put lipstick on the pig to make it look
Yeah,
palatable.
You're exactly right, Barry. And, you know, some of the more obvious things, too, is this might be forbidden, but, you know, Governor Kasich's education reform package is all built on Common Core.
Just like his health care is all built on Obamacare.
Yeah. So, you know, for those who thought that
you're not among a bunch of Republican apologists here on this program, we bash them as we see them.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, okay. You're absolutely right. You know, Governor Kasich supports this stuff. We don't. That's a problem. And, you know, we are a statewide PAC, and we have the wherewithal to be able to endorse him, but I'm not going to endorse him. You know, our group will not endorse him under these terms right now. You know, we've got to settle this.
Mark, go ahead. I'm sorry, we're still having a little bit of technical difficulty, but go ahead and repeat what you just said.
Well, so I was just saying, you know, I mean, if Governor Kasich is resolved to continue with, you know, his ed package as it is, we have a problem. So, you know, I just written a really good article for the Ohio Conservative Review, which is a web-based group that, you know, flagships a lot of conservative writers. And I put an article up there called Confrontational Politics and the Common Core. And it's getting a lot of rave reviews. In fact, it's for a new group, it's got 800 page views. And I guess that's a lot for them. But, you know, I outline a very specific plan to deal with detractors who refuse to deal with Common Core And I outline a little plan there. You know, we're going to have it on our website, but I outline a small quick plan for just the layman person, you know, who's not the political wonk, you know, just to go and read it and say, oh, this makes a lot of sense. And this is what I got to do. And, you know, we're all about equipping, you know, not just homeschoolers, but all conservatives in Ohio and people who are God-fearing citizens, you know, to be able to go out and voice their opinion about what their government's doing.
And by the way, I've read that article. It is very good. I've been meaning to go out and make a comment, but I haven't had a minute to do that. But I'm going to do it probably about not too long after we hang up here.
And what we're also going to do, Mark, is we are going to attach a link to that particular column to our website at principalpolicy.com so that when people listen to our podcast on this, that they can go to the website and they either to OCR or to our website and link to that so that they can read more of what you said in that. I think it's a great idea because the more we educate people quickly about these issues, the quicker we can build up that grassroots force that will be able to go to those elected officials when they're coming to them for, oh, come and help me knock on doors or make phone calls for me. Well, are you going to oppose Common Core? Well, no, you need to put it in writing. Here, why don't you put it in writing that you will vote against expansion of Common Core, the park assessments, and any data collection that the state board, state government, or State Department of Education wants to do that is associated with the Common Core standards. Now, and that's where you get them.
And that's our good friend Tom DeWeese when he gave his training seminar that we sponsored, last Friday?
A week ago Friday.
That's one thing he said, always get these guys to put it down. They'll tell you anything to get you to volunteer, to get your vote, to get you to do this, to give them a donation, but make them write it down or just hand them a piece of paper and say, will you sign this?
Yeah. Well, you know, generally in our questionnaire process, our questions are pretty targeted. I know they have many to fill out, but here's our proposition. If you want to be endorsed by our group, you know, which we feel is valuable, plus you may get an infusion of physical tangible help in your campaign, which is worth, you know, just as much as campaign contributions, in my opinion. And if they cannot put it down in writing and produce certain statements that are, make it clear where they stand, or they don't want to send back the questionnaire, that speaks volumes for where OEF is going anyhow. So we're not going to just support somebody just to placate and go along. We're really done with that. We're all about supporting the right people that say the right things. And, you know, we've had some people, like Common Core wasn't a campaign issue 3 years ago with the State Board of Education. So we didn't ask questions about Common Core 3 years ago. But you can bet we're going to ask it this time. And if people aren't clear about their answers, whether it's the State Board of Education, whether it's the State House, or whether it's the State Senate, we are not going to issue an endorsement nor give our help to anybody that is not going to be right on the issue.
Well, Mark, that's well said. And for all of our listeners out there, if you agree with that, give Mark a little bit of help. Go to OhioansForFreedom.com. That's the website for Ohioans for Educational Freedom. It's OhioansForFreedom.com. And sign up. Become a volunteer. Get their newsletter. Hey, make a donation. Help them be able to help you. And this is not just homeschoolers, Mark. As you said, this is parental choice across the board, and we need to hold those officials and those candidates accountable for standing up for parental rights.
Absolutely.
So, Mark, we want to thank you very much for being on the show today. Sorry, we don't have any parting gifts for you, but hopefully some of our listeners will find it in their hearts to write you into their giving plan.
We want to say thank you to Mark Stevenson of Ohioans for Educational Freedom. If you'd like more information on that organization, or if you'd like some information on the pending legislation and some of the things we talked about today, you can go to ohioansforfreedom.com. That is Ohioans for Educational Freedom. That's Mark's website. And there are updated stories on some of the pending legislation and other things in the legislature and the state school board that we talked about today. So go out there, www.ohioansforfreedom.com. And while you're at it, you can come out. If you like what we did today, you can come out and make a comment on our website. I'm going to post this as soon as I can. www.principledpolicy.com. And that's it for today. We are out of time. Join us again next week for another Principles and Policies. If you missed the phone numbers that we gave at the beginning of the program, you can find those at our website, www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. Please retrieve those phone numbers and call those representatives and the governor. It's imperative that you do this. We need to get rid of Common Core. Thanks for listening.